Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you are. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
How do you go about getting an exorcism?
I beg your pardon?
Hi, this is Mark Kermode. Thanks for downloading this Kermode on Film podcast. This week, my special guest is Kingsley Ben-Adir, who plays Malcolm X in the movie One Night in Miami. The film has recently been nominated for 3 Oscars, and when I spoke to Kingsley, it had just been announced that he'd been nominated for the BAFTA EE Rising Star Award. We'll hear from him after this clip.
Oh my goodness.
What's on, Cash?
Why am I so pretty?
Hey, congratulations, champ.
I can get used to that. I was made in
America, land of the free, home of the brave. This movement that we are in is called a struggle. Because we are fighting for our lives. Welcome to America.
This ain't about civil rights. Welcome to America. They ain't giving black people what they really want.
What's that?
Hey, I was made in America. That's why I'm out here saving America.
Power.
Black power.
I like the sound of that.
I wish I lived in America.
We have to be there for each other.
Heard everybody rich. All I gotta do is run, jump, kick. I'm a kid in your area. I done made it to America. I'm amazed at America. Welcome to America.
Okay, so let's begin by saying, Kingsley, congratulations on the EE nomination. How long have you known?
Thanks, Mark. I've known for too long. I feel like maybe 3-4 weeks or something like that.
Tell us how you found out, and tell us what it means to you.
Donna and Laura called me and said that I've been nominated, but you're not allowed to tell anyone for ages. And I was like, okay, cool. I was just so surprised and just a wonderful feeling to be connected to such a prestigious award. I just look back and I so many people have been nominated over the years who I love as actors so and actresses so much. Like there's people who've been nominated over the years whose work I just look forward to seeing so much.
Yeah.
And so I guess surreal is, a little bit surreal.
How much does all that stuff, I mean, I know, you know, people are, I mean, here's my own experience of it, right? Awards don't mean anything until you get nominated for one, at which point they suddenly mean an awful lot. How important is it to you?
I don't want to sit here and say that they're not important, because I don't want to like poo on the thing that I'm experiencing today. But it's nice to be honored and thought of, and especially today I was looking at some of the younger artists who had been nominated, and I've been so wowed by their work, and I was just like, this is going to open up so many incredible doors for you guys. I don't think Buki's 20, you know, she's still in her teens. And I was just, yeah. Then I suddenly felt the scale of it. Chope and I have been, you know, we've been auditioning, you know, around here for almost, you know, over a decade. So we knew of each other a little bit, but I feel like it's special. It was special for all of us in a different way. Yeah. But yes, as I said, some of my favorite actors and actresses, Lakeith Stanfield, Jesse Buckley, Michael Fassbender, you know. So yeah, it feels cool.
Cool. Now listen, before we start talking about One Night in Miami, I just want to, am I right in thinking that you were born or grew up in Barnet?
My passport, yeah. I think the hospital, I think I was born in Barnet Hospital, but moved to Kentish Town pretty soon after.
Oh, okay.
So I have no connection to Barnet other than I think I was born in the hospital because that's what it says on my passport.
Okay.
But
okay.
From reception, I think I went to nursery in Barnet maybe, but yeah. From reception onwards, or year one, I was firmly in Kentish Town.
You see, the reason I ask is because I'm a Barnet boy, and you very, very rarely meet other. Because I was just, you know, just talking about people say, you know, what's it like in Barnet? Go, well, it's the arse end of the Northern Line. Barnet is as far as you can get out of London without actually getting out of London. My entire childhood was spent in the why did I grow up in Barnet? You know, why is my dad's from East Barnet and we were New Barnet and the cinema was High Barnet and everything I knew
was Barnet.
Barnet. And so
did you go to Folds? Did you go to Folds Primary School?
No, I went to St Mary's Primary School, and that was actually that was really lovely. I complain about it for no reason at all because St Mary's was just down the road from a really, really good record shop called Loppy Logs, which I really enjoyed. But it was just like one of those things about growing up in Barnet was there's a line in The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe in which one of the kids says, "We're not heroes, we're from Finchley." And that's exactly how I always felt about Barnet.
But I'm sure if I went to Barnet now, one of my best friends lives in Barnet, and there's some like incredible countryside and beautiful walks that are like so close that I probably would appreciate a little bit more if I was around there now.
Anyway, look, enough of the reminiscing. Talk to us about One Night in Miami, because it's had a fantastic reception, obviously based on a stage play, but the most impressive thing about the film is that it doesn't feel stagey. It feels like a piece of cinema. So tell us about how you got that role and what that role meant to you.
Well, I guess, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, down to Tammy and Regina and the production design and the conversations that were going on. I've really had no idea what film I was going into because of the time from the moment Regina cast me to the first day on set, there was just a very small amount of time to prepare. So I just went into a very narrow Malcolm X sort of minded sort of drive. And I think the work, I was just trying to understand what Malcolm was going through at that time. I feel there's a very specific moment in Malcolm's life that became more and more interesting the more and more I dug. And just the stress and the pressure that he must have been under around that time, and the changes that were happening for him, sort of blew my mind. But what was the process of me getting the job? It came to me.
Were you familiar with the play beforehand?
I remember hearing that it was going on, and I remember. I think there was an audition for the play when it was at the Donmar for Sam, and I remember feeling like I can't sing, so I didn't end up going for it in the end. But yeah, originally the script came to me to put something on tape for Cassius Clay, and I read it a couple of times, and Malcolm was really the part that I thought was, you know, I thought Malcolm was the best part. I thought Malcolm was the part that I would want to play, and Cash really felt a bit too young, and I thought there's probably going to be someone else out there who's going to do a better job. So I left it, and then four or five months later, the actor playing Malcolm dropped out. So there was this quick whirlwind turnaround where Regina had like a few weeks to find her Malcolm, and I put something on tape and she saw it, and then we begun a 2 week back and forth conversation.
I know that for actors, this is completely normal, but for everybody else, when you say you put something on tape, these kind of self-taped auditions, how does that work? I cannot imagine how you would put something on, you know, presumably in your kitchen or in your front room, you tape. How does it work?
You know, I've never been someone who could get down with the whole like just putting my phone on a table and shooting in my kitchen. I've got really superstitious and careful about the way that I send tapes over to America, especially when an audition comes through that's this big and you know that Regina King will be watching.
Yeah.
So there's a studio.
Oscar-winning Regina King.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Who actually knows, like, what she's doing,
yeah,
right?
There's no way I would tape anything on my phone to send to Regina King. So I used a little bit of the savings that I had, and I rent out a studio in town where there's a proper camera operator, and I try and bring in actors who I've come up with, who I trust, to come into the room and actually do real work, and who are going to try and listen and respond and, like, contribute in the, like, I really treat it like a filming day, or I certainly did with this.
Yeah.
And the sound quality and the, and it also, it's just, it's somewhere you can go get it done and then leave. So you mm-hmm. don't have the whole rigmarole of having to go through all the footage and then turn it into an MP4 and then get the MP4 and do it on WeTransfer. And then it's just the whole day just start. And then by the time you get to the end of the day, you look at those tapes and you're sick of all of them and you don't even want to send them. So I feel like when there's a really special audition, and they come every now and again, and Regina was definitely one of those special ones, and Malcolm, I guess, a special studio in town that I go to.
That's fantastic, because, I mean, I have heard of people say, oh, yeah, no, I shot it in my bedroom. And I can't imagine how you do it. I mean, you wouldn't say to a musician, oh, just record us something, in your cupboard. You just wouldn't do it. So that could completely make sense about hiring out a studio. And the second thing is, obviously, Malcolm X has a very particular voice, a very particular voice. Describe for me how you achieve that voice.
From the moment I found out that Regina had given me the job, I didn't stop listening to him from that moment all the way through. And if I wasn't listening to him, I was watching and listening to him. And if I wasn't watching and listening to him, I was working on text, or I was on set, or I was shooting a scene. I just wanted to stay with him as much as I could, even if he was just on in the background. So there was just a constant stream of his voice and his sound. And at the same time, I'm sort of a bit obsessed with dialect. So I have 3 dialect coaches, which is a little bit expensive, but I think I just had some really, my first audition experiences in LA when I was in my 20s were really bad. And I got some really bad feedback about my accent. It was a sort of a bad mixture of Texan, Italian American, African American, general. It was just a weird mishmash of all these different sounds. And I think the experience of being stopped in my first few auditions just gave me a really good lesson, nice and early, that dialect was not something to be messing around with, and it was something to be, for me anyway, taken really seriously. And I'm good at dialects, and I can get them 70, 80% on my own, but that sort of finesse, getting it from 80 to 100, working out where the muscularity needs to change, what you actually need to physically be doing with your mouth. There are people who are trained and specialized in that, and who can really, really help change the game. And so I've been lucky enough to work with Liz Himmelstein, who's one of the top dialect coaches in the world. We had Trey Cotton, who was on set, who was working with the boys as well, and Jamie's another dialect coach I work with in LA. So I had 3 different opinions that I was sort of going around, and I was using bits from all of them and then doing my own work. And but yeah, Malcolm's a very, very, like, specific sound, and you want to nail it, because it's the sound, it's the rhythm, the cadence, the movement, his thought patterns, the way he thinks, the way he so yeah. But it's a lot of fun, and it's a good feeling when you connect the science of the dialect to the text and actually get it to feel real. It's a moment where your body knows that it's happened. It's like, yeah, you feel when it's wrong, and you cringe, and then you feel when it's right, because it just flows and it just goes. And so, yeah.
Look, Alexander the Great conquered the whole world at the age of 30, and yeah, I conquered the world of boxing at 22 without sustaining so much as a scratch.
That's right. Whoa.
There he goes.
You do the math.
All right. When is this party going down?
Yeah, that's a good question. What's on the agenda, Malcolm?
Well, I thought this would be a wonderful chance for us to reflect on what's happened tonight. Like our young brother said, there's no denying that greater forces were at work.
You mean no one else is coming?
Well, rest assured, my brother, you're not missing anything.
But people listening to this can't see, but as you're describing this, you're moving. And part of what you're doing is you're physically expressing that. And I mean, I'm really interested in the way in which voice and physicality, like for me, many of the best performances you see, it's not to do with what is said, it's to do with how it said and how somebody stands while they say it. So you've talked beautifully about the physicality of Malcolm's voice. What about the physicality of the way he stood? What is it about the stance of that puts you into that character?
It was so important to me to lose those 20 pounds. And Regina I remember her bit of time. She's like, don't worry, you know, there's a lot we can do with costume and suits, and we can, you know, use baggier stuff. And I was like, just on the roof, Malcolm physically next to Cash and next to Jim needed to feel life and gangly and slender.
Yeah.
He just needed to. Jim needed to be able, you needed to feel like if Malcolm tried to barge Jim or Cash over, he would be knocked down himself. And naturally that I'm closer to Eli and Aldis in that weight. So it really genuinely was, I thought, for the story, I wanted to get that weight down just so it felt as much like Malcolm as possible. And I had in my notes, you know, that really after dissecting the text, really after understanding what the need driving Malcolm through this story was, really understanding the stakes and the pressure and the life and death situation that Malcolm was in, the ticks and the nuances and the gestures of Malcolm were kind of like the icing on the cake. They were the things that I came in and tried to just, and I always say to Regina jokingly, like, if I go too far, just let me know. But there's a very particular way that Malcolm throws his hands, and there's a very particular point in Malcolm's speech where he takes his glasses off and he cleans them. When you watch him over, you know, the amount of time I spent watching him, you just see these little physical details that repeat themselves.
Yeah.
And I was really trying to technically impose them in moments just to see if they worked. And I guess on the editing, we lost a lot of them on the editing room floor, but Regina was really, I love in the edit when I first saw the film, there's some of those moments she's really nurtured and tried to keep in. And over the course of an hour and 50 minutes, they add up to help create the feel of Malcolm without doing a caricature or an impersonation.
And how much does it matter that Regina is an actor? How much does that change her directing?
I feel like everything. I feel like it was, I look back now and I go, like, I don't think anyone else could have directed this movie. I think the way she allowed us to play and explore on the floor together as actors, the way those big 15-page scenes, we were running them through each coverage setup. We were running them through. We weren't chopping. We weren't. She was letting us. She was letting us get the real flow of the scenes, and she understands as an actor how much space you can sometimes need, and she never bombarded us with too many ideas at a time. There was never too many technical notes. It was always just about, what do you need? What are you going for? What's the feeling? It was a very acting focused set. The energy and the attention was on the performance. We were really, really lucky. And I look at the movie now, and I feel like some of the really the most emotionally tender moments or the emotionally explosive moments really were only able to happen because of Regina. They were discoveries in the moment. Mm-hmm. Because we were allowed to play, because we were allowed to try things out, because we felt safe, because we knew that Regina was only going to use the best coverage. And so I feel like the play element of it really felt like a rehearsal room floor. It felt like we were rehearsing, and I think that's where the best discoveries happen, when you're working in that place. And Regina created that, and Regina, yeah, it's all down to her, really.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
But it's interesting as well that it's, you know, it's a drama that plays out, in fact, with the exception of the rooftop, and there are some external scenes, but largely it takes place within confined spaces. And I'm sitting there watching it thinking, well, firstly, I think the way in which the camera is moving is making this cinematic. But the second thing I'm thinking is, it must have been very crowded. Now, I know that obviously when sets are done, they're built in a way that, you know, so you have more movement. But it feels to me like, how did you manage to get everyone in that space and then all the tech stuff around you? Did you feel crowded or did you feel like you had room to move and breathe?
I felt like we had room. The walls came down and the cameras... yeah, we're very strategically placed. And yeah, we would rehearse and block in the morning and get very, very specific about where we would be and making sure we were using the space in the best possible way to kind of make it feel dynamic, making sure that we see characters moving through the space, walking from point A to point B, and the shift and the dance of all of that was really mapped out each morning. And specific, but I think just because of Regina and Tammy and again, like the space they gave to us, and you know, those scenes work if the acting dynamic is right.
Yeah.
And so everything was set up to kind of help that. And I think having walls that came down and having cameras strategically placed so they felt like they were outside of our way meant that we could play more and we could not feel, but you know, when they're coming in for coverage, you know, they came in for coverage and it felt, you know, as all film sets do, you know, quite technical.
You mentioned in passing earlier on, you said, well, I can't really sing, but you are musical. I mean, you come from a musical background, don't you? I mean, I imagine that you can sing.
Do you know what? I've been auditioning the last week for a big musical, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not going to tell you what it is, because I'm probably not going to get it. But the conversation has been about the fact that I'm not a singer. You know, I'm not a trained singer, and I'm certainly not a musical theatre singer. And I've been working with a singing teacher for the last 3 weeks, and I've done maybe, you know, 7 or 8 hours and working on a big song. And I've just been learning about the voice, and it's not as bad a voice as I thought, but it's certainly not
no
like,
shit. I mean,
if we were talking about doing 8 shows a week,
yeah,
it's not happening. Do you know what I mean? It's not happening. But if it was a musical in a film and we just needed to make sure we could get through the song a few times and record it, then that's kind of different. Or if it's in a low key or a high key and realizing, I think the F sharp or the A flat, like figuring out what my range is.
Yeah.
But listen, my granddad's brothers were jazz musicians in New York in the 40s and 50s. My dad's a musician. And
So it's kind of in the blood, Kingsley. I mean, you know, there's no getting away from it. It's kind of in the blood, right?
I like music, you know, I feel musical, but there's a difference between feeling musical and liking music and being able to sing. That's like two, that's two different things. And yeah, and I had a whole thing, like there was a Sam Cooke movie that was happening maybe 6 or 7 years ago. And I remember auditioning for it and just, yeah, the singing was what lost me the job.
Yeah. Listen, I have seen plenty of movies, musical movies, which feature people who cannot sing.
Right.
And, you know, and they've, you know, they've got away with it. But I guarantee you'd have a great voice. Okay. So you've auditioned for that and it may or may not happen. What is happening? What do we know that we will see you in now, next coming? What's coming up?
One Night in Miami is the film that I'm promoting. I don't have anything coming out in 6 months. You know, I'm trying to work out what the next story I want to be a part of is. And there's a few things going on, but nothing's set. Yeah, so I don't want to say anything and then jinx it. I probably just jinxed that musical by talking about it, so that's probably not going to happen now. And there's a couple things I'm hopefully going to tie up in the next few weeks, but I feel like if I say them out loud, then that's the sure way to make sure they won't happen. But I, for the last, you know, the last year really, but especially the last 2 months, or especially the last 4 weeks since the movie's come out, I feel like I've read more. I feel like I've read more scripts in the last 3 weeks than I've read in the last 3 years. Yeah. So it's I'm just getting used to reading that much and learning how to pace out a day so that you can read 3 scripts in a day if you have to, and how my brain works in that way, and how you need breaks, and you know. So the work for me has really been reading and meeting loads of interesting directors and creative people on Zoom. And I've really been enjoying that. And I felt really stimulated and occupied and busy doing it. And I feel like I have been at work. I just haven't been on a set. And, you know, there's a whole bunch next week. And I'm really enjoying that part of it, because if people say, like, what's next? And what's your dream part and stuff? And I go, well, actually, I've always dreamed about being in a situation where I get to read scripts. You know, I've always dreamed about getting to like have a dialogue with, you know, a director about a vision and story, and to talk about story and character, and actually being able to take a moment to go like, what could I bring to this, as opposed to desperately scrambling around just trying to get a gig. So that shift to me is the gift that Regina has given me. And even though I don't have anything set at the moment that I'm going into, this to me feels like such a special point. And a part of the work that I'm really, 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 really enjoying.
I want to ask you one last thing. You said rather beautifully then, you said, I've been doing this stuff on Zoom and I love it. And I honestly cannot remember the last time somebody said to me, I love Zoom. Because having, you know, after a year of everything, I think everyone's getting to the point that it's like, no more Zoom. No more Zoom is kind of the thing. But it is what's really lovely is to hear the enthusiasm, to hear how fired up you are by it, to hear that sense of grasping all these possibilities. And I think that's brilliant. I think it's absolutely deserved. As I said, the nomination, congratulations on that. But, you know, congratulations on the film and the extravagantly bright future that you clearly have ahead of you. At the point when you're being showered with awards and all the rest of it, please come back and talk to us. And remember,
thank you, Mark.
We were there at the beginning. It's been really nice to speak to you. I wish you all the best with the craziness of awards season. And let us know if you get the musical, because I'm kind of really excited by the sound of that.
I look forward to talking to you again, man. I watch your show all the time. You've got your voice is just, it's pretty surreal. You're having this conversation with me right now. So I look forward to the next time we get a chance to do it again.
Lovely to speak to you. Take care.
You too, Mark. All right. Thanks. Take care. Bye.
Well, there we are. My thanks to my guest, Kingsley Benadir. You can find One Night in Miami now on Amazon Prime Video. Thanks so much for listening to this Kermit on Film podcast. If you've enjoyed it, remember to subscribe, tell your friends, go over to our Patreon page where there's loads of video extras. Stay safe. Keep watching the skies.